This podcast is sponsored by Alt Legal. Alt Legal, easy to use IP docketing with powerful automation, deadline calculation, and reporting.
Autumn Wood Boyd has been practicing for 12 years and opened her solo law practice 2 years ago. The law office of Autumn Wood Boyd works with creative and online business owners on copyright, trademark, and general business matters. Autumn also hosts a podcast, The Legal Roadmap, which offers creative entrepreneurs information about protecting their rights and staying out of legal hot water. Autumn's favorite thing is helping creatives grow their dream business with smart collaborations and deals and dispute resolution when they need it. You can find Autumn in Chattanooga, Tennessee in her off hours, hanging out with her three kids and husband, monogramming and putting glitter on anything that stays still long enough, or sipping a glass of champagne after bedtime. You can find out more about Autumn's practice online at awbfirm.com. You can also find out more about Alt Legal on Twitter at altlegalhq and at altlegal.com. Thank you for joining us and enjoy. Hi, Autumn. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. So glad to be here chatting with you today, Hannah.
Thanks. So to get started, you're a solo practitioner in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and your practice is a virtual practice. So I want to talk a little bit more about your particular practice, but just to give the listeners some background, let's start all the way at the beginning. So how did you become interested in the law, and what influenced your decision to make the leap to going to law school and then starting a legal career?
Yeah, well, I kind of hopped around a bit in college. I went to Indiana University thinking that I was going to train to be a professional opera singer, which is quite different from what I ended up doing. That turned out not to be a great fit, mostly because I'm not good enough, which was a good thing to find out very early. So I still enjoy singing, but I'm glad not to be trying to do it professionally. Mm-hmm. So from there, I went to journalism school at Indiana, which I loved asking questions, and I loved the writing, I loved the newsroom, but it didn't look like a career path that was going to be what I wanted. Long story short, I wanted to do newspaper work, and there's a lot of, you know, you start in a small market and then you have to move around a bit to work your way up, and that just wasn't very appealing to me. So I kind of looked around to see what other professions might make a good use of my talents and skills and the things I enjoyed doing, and law seemed to be a pretty good fit. So I changed course and decided to apply to law school right out of college and went straight through.
And so in law school, did you study? I know now you do kind of, you know, this creative business owner, small business owner focused law. So was there anything a particular focus while you're in law school, or any areas of particular interest?
Yeah, again, I kind of changed paths. I went to law school thinking I would be an entertainment lawyer without really knowing what that meant. It just sounded glamorous and fun and interesting. And I went to Vanderbilt University, which is in Nashville, so there's a lot of entertainment law being practiced there. And I've always liked, with the opera singer idea, I've always loved music. I love the arts. And so I thought that would be a really great fit with my interests. When I got to law school and, you know, summer clerked at different firms, I found out that being an entertainment attorney it's a lot of contract negotiation, contract drafting. And especially in Nashville, as you're just getting started out, it's a lot of going to shows and showcases and, you know, spending nights out in the bars trying to meet people as you're kind of up and coming and growing your client base. And again, once I kind of saw the reality of that, I realized that was not necessarily what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And kind of changed course and decided to become a litigator. Which again, you know, it's still a lot of writing, and I also was a theater kid in high school, so I love getting up and talking, you know, all of that was very appealing to me. So that was kind of my path through law school. I did take a lot of intellectual property classes in law school. I still wanted to do kind of IP litigation, but just switched that focus a little bit.
And you mentioned clerking. You clerked during school. Did you also clerk after law school as well?
I didn't clerk for a judge during law school. I just clerked at firms.
Oh, okay. And so were there any lessons that, you know, when you both in those experiences and then when you worked at firms after graduation that were helpful when you went to open your own practice?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I did a couple different summer clerkships. I worked at Gaylord Entertainment for a little bit, which is a big company in Nashville. They own the Opryland Hotel. They have they own the Grand Ole Opry. They have all kinds of different. They used to own some theme parks. So that was really interesting working in house, and I got to observe the kind of negotiation and closing of a deal to purchase a music publisher. So that was really interesting. And then working at law firms, seeing kind of the other side of that from the law firm perspective. I clerked for a big firm in D.C. and two big firms in Nashville. And so those were great, just learning how to practice law. I mean, you go to law school and you don't have any idea what to do. And I was really lucky that I had a lot of really great mentors along the way who were very generous with their time and, you know, allowed me to sit in on client meetings and even ask questions sometimes. So, I think all of that was necessary to learn all of the things that you need to know to start your own practice.
Yeah. And so for your current practice, I guess, as a starting point, how did you make the decision that you wanted to start your own practice and focus on kind of these small businesses and more creative types that you assist today?
Yeah. So I've been out on my own about 2 years. And 2 years ago, I was working for a small boutique intellectual property litigation firm. We specialized in copyright litigation called Harmon and Seidman. And I had been at that job almost 7 years. I was telecommuting, so I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The firm had an office in Colorado, but really our practice was totally nationwide because, of course, copyright law is all federal. And our clients were nationwide. We worked mostly with photographers and stock photography agencies. And that was a very small firm. It was a small team and a lot of work, and we were all really passionate about what we were doing and wanted to do a really great job. There was a fair amount of travel with that job, and I have young children. So it had just gotten, I felt like I had kind of reached a tipping point where the work was really fun, but it was also really demanding, and something had to give. So, you know, there really wasn't a way for me to stay at that job and have the kind of work-life balance that I wanted. And that's not their fault. That was just the job. You know, looked around and tried to, I spent a couple months reflecting and trying to figure out, you know, do I want to leave the law altogether or do I want to go work at a law firm? Do I want to maybe go in-house somewhere? And just kind of after a lot of soul searching landed on the idea that I really wanted to be able to have control over my own time and my own days and my own work. And the only way to do that was really to start my own practice.
And your practice is a virtual practice. So I guess, how did you land on that decision versus doing kind of a more traditional practice structure? And then for anyone who doesn't know exactly what that entails to be a virtual practice, you know, how does it differ from a more traditional model?
Sure. Yeah, I actually started thinking that I would have a more traditional practice. I'm in Chattanooga, and we have a fairly vibrant startup community here. I actually just came from a startup event at lunchtime. Uh-huh. So I thought that would be, again, a really good fit for my expertise, my background doing copyright and trademark work. And I should say I transitioned out of litigation pretty much altogether when I left my last job. So my practice now is almost entirely transactional. So I thought I would be working with a lot of local companies on their IP needs. And I have an office that's not in my house. I had worked from home when I was telecommuting with my prior job. So it's just been kind of an evolution. It turned out that the startup community is often not ready for an attorney, especially an IP attorney that's pretty specialized, until they get further along in their company journey, until they, you know, have some funding. And then at that point, they've often hooked in with a big firm to do their corporate work, and then that firm handles their IP work. So it was really just kind of a market research lapse on my end. But it was good to learn. So in that same time, when I was kind of figuring out what did the startup community need, and that I wasn't a great fit for that, I developed this practice just by going into Facebook groups for entrepreneurs because I was learning, and then all of them needed lawyers, and many of them were pretty early in their business, but some of them were far enough along that they had seen that they had copyright and trademark issues, and a lot of them are online businesses that I was meeting. And that I have found that is a real niche where I can do pretty much everything they need. I can do some basic corporate work and then their copyright and trademark matters. And usually their biggest asset, the thing that they're using to make money and the biggest value in their company is going to be some sort of intellectual property. So they're producing an e-course or they're selling a digital product or they're doing coaching and working with people one-on-one. So it just became really by happenstance that I turned out to be a good fit for this crowd and that most of them are not located here. And so the virtual aspect kind of happened by accident. But since mm-hmm. I had telecommuted in my last job, I was very comfortable dealing with clients who weren't here. And, you know, I was able to pretty easily set up some systems for communication and case management and all of those things. So I'm happy to delve into that aspect of it more if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear, you know, sort of what kind of toolkit you use to maintain those relationships and, you know, build out your firm.
Yeah, absolutely. So usually my first contact with a client is either in a Facebook group or an email. I get very few phone calls. And then from there, we'll communicate either by phone or Skype or email. I know some people use messaging systems like Slack. I'm not as big a fan of that. I like to be able to find things. So I prefer email. It's searchable. And then once they decide to hire me and we're doing onboarding, I use Clio, which is a law practice management software. And then I use Alt Legal for my trademark intake. I'm doing a fair amount of trademark work now. So that makes it really easy to send them questionnaires, and then they send me the information so that we don't have any, you know, any issues with misspellings or me getting the information wrong since I'm not sitting down with them in person. Those have been great tools as I've been growing my practice.
Great. And so I was looking on your website to kind of get a sense of, you know, some of the offerings that you offer these businesses. And I noticed that you have some things like something called like a Get Legit service, which looks like maybe you kind of bundle some of your services specific to these businesses. So
exactly.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about how you came up with that and, you know, if that's something that you found is well suited for these kinds of clients?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I started out with the idea that I wanted to do mostly flat rate and not hourly work. And that has worked really well. It's, the clients love it because it's predictable. And I am do not miss billing my time. More of a litigation-based practice. And so that's been a great fit. And it's been a bit of a, you know, trial and error to figure out what the sweet spot is with the price versus the amount of time I have to spend on things. But I've kind of figured out, you know, how long does it take me to draft a custom contract or file a trademark or do the different things. So with that, I was finding that a lot of clients, especially if they'd been in business 2 or 3 years, so they, you know, they knew what they were doing and maybe they'd had a couple issues, so they had an idea of what they needed. A lot of times they would come to me and they would say, I need, you know, 5 things, and they would be ready to rock and roll. So I put together a package just where it gives them a little bit of a discount. It gives me a little bit of more predictability with, you know, my workload because I, you know, they sign up for it. The Get Legit is a 6-project package. And so that can be a contract or it can be forming an LLC or doing an operating agreement, filing a trademark, you know, kind of any of the different things that I offer. They can pick and choose. And we start out with a legal planning session. So I go over their whole business, what they're doing, what they are planning on doing, how they're set up, if they have a corporate entity, what their intellectual property portfolio is at this point, and what they hope to do in the future. So it really allows me to have a longer term working relationship with the client, which is what I really enjoy, and be more of a strategic partner.
Definitely. And this kind of goes hand in hand with this, but have you found that there are certain legal issues that are, you know, more common with these types of businesses that you're working with, or maybe things that these businesses and these or individuals are prone to overlook? Maybe they think they don't need a certain legal protection that they're unaware of.
Yes, yes, and yes. So I would say often the first thing I'll work with a client on is, and a lot of my clients are service providers, is putting together a custom contract that they can use with their clients. A lot of times they've either borrowed one from a friend or found something on the internet or maybe cobbled something together, but it doesn't really reflect the way they do business, or and it doesn't include all the protections that they really need. And often, you know, it won't even address who owns the intellectual property and the things they're creating. So for a graphic designer or a web designer. So that's often a really easy hole to fill in the beginning. A lot of them also are not registering their copyrights, which since my background is copyright litigation, I am a copyright evangelist. I want everybody to be registering their copyrights. Mm-hmm. So and I would say a lot of my work with clients is really education. Most of them don't have a formal business background. Many of them, you know, they really are creatives. So they didn't go to business school. Maybe they haven't even worked a corporate job where you kind of learn some of those, this is how we do business type concepts. So I do a lot of education of just like, these are the things you need to be thinking about, even if you don't want to hire me to do them today. You know, you may eventually need a trademark registration or a copyright registration. And I see a lot, I deal with a lot of copycat issues, so where their content is stolen. That's often the first time that they contact me because, you know, until something goes wrong, you think nothing's ever going to go wrong.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And this kind of builds on that, but do you have any sort of key pieces of, you know, maybe a little bit more generalized advice for, you know, creative types or people starting out as service providers or small businesses, anything that, you know, they should really watch out for?
Yeah, I mean, I think just using contracts is the biggest thing. I have a lot of creative clients who want to be friends with their clients that they're providing services to, and then that's fine. But a lot of them are kind of scared of contracts. Mm-hmm. And so I really try and show them that a contract protects both sides. It's not something that you do to be a jerk to your client and try and put a bunch of things in there that are going to harm them. You know, that there are things in there that protect both of you. And it's really just a matter of you're already agreeing to something. This is just putting it in writing so that everybody knows what to expect. And, you know, if things don't go the way you hope they do, it will give you a clear way out. So that is the biggest thing for me. A lot of people come to me, you know, do I need an LLC or do I need a corporation? And they're not even using a contract. So right. I work on that first.
And then from a broader sort of practice perspective, do you have any advice or tips for lawyers who are looking to either sort of move into the solo practice or virtual practice realm?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really helpful, and this has certainly been true with my practice, which is growing. I'm currently hiring help, is to really narrow in your focus because people, you will meet people and you will do work for people and they will want to send other people to you. And it's really helpful if you can tell them exactly what you do. So for me, I tell people, you know, I provide copyright, trademark, and business advice for creative and online businesses. So my friends don't send me real estate matters anymore because they know that I don't do that kind of work. And I could do that kind of work, but it would take me twice as long or four times as long to figure out how to do it because it's not what I do every day. And so I really think that by narrowing your niche, it helps you get the kind of referrals that you want. And it also helps you provide really excellent service to the kinds of clients that you're wanting to work with so that you'll get more referrals. And then it just kind of becomes a machine. That is really important.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I'm sure some people sometimes overextend themselves in the beginning, but narrowing it, yeah, it ends up serving your interests as well.
Yeah, and I found out every time I take something because I want to help a friend out or, you know, because the revenue is a little short this month and I'm just trying to fill in the gaps, you know, it always ends up biting me and it takes 12 times longer than I think, or I don't quote, you know, since I do flat fees, I don't quote a high enough flat fee and then I end up working a lot more than I thought. So I have found that if I really do stick with my focus, that the work comes and, you know, the good work comes, and it's just a matter of maybe being a little bit patient.
Great. And so to wrap up, I'm just going to ask you a series of rapid fire style questions that have a little less to do with being an IP attorney and your practice and a little more about who you are outside of the law. So they're just for fun. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, great. What's the last book you read?
I read The After Party, which is a fiction book about two girls in the South in the 60s by Anton de Sclafani.
And what's an app that you can't live without, you're constantly on?
Asana, which is task or project management. I use that with my virtual assistant. It's amazing.
And what's one of your favorite sources of legal news?
I'm on the executive committee for the Tennessee Bar Association's IP section, and they have an awesome newsletter, so that's what I rely on.
And who's a woman, professional or otherwise, that you admire or look up to?
Yeah, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, all the way.
Definitely. And what's one of the best pieces of advice that you've received or something that stuck with you?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, actually, before I went out on my own, someone told me that how you spend your days is how you spend your life. And that has helped me, you know, think about how I'm structuring my days, because what you do all day is really how your whole life is. And so if you're spending it doing something you're miserable at, that will carry over to your whole life.
Yeah, that's good advice. And the last one is, what would you be doing if you weren't an attorney?
I would probably be writing, doing some sort of writing.
Okay, that's it. So thanks so much for joining us, Autumn. Do you have any sort of parting words of wisdom, anything that we didn't get to cover?
I'll just mention one of the most fun projects that I've worked on is putting together a podcast. It's called The Legal Roadmap, and it's geared towards clients or potential clients, other, you know, business owners and creatives. Just the first season gives them an overview of the different legal issues in their business they may want to think about, or things they can do themselves, and when to hire a professional. Trying to get the word out.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, so people can find it easily.
Awesome.
And if any of the listeners want to reach out to you and get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, I have a ton of information on my website. It's awbfirm.com. And then you can email me at info@awbfirm.com.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Autumn.
Thank you, Anna.
That's this week's episode. Thank you for joining us and see you next time.